about? It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Amy Adams.
Hi, Amy. How are we going?
I'm great, Laura. Are you?
Yeah. It's been a stressful week, and I can imagine it's been pretty stressful in your offices as well.
Yeah, it hasn't been your average week in politics, that's for sure.
No, certainly not.
Looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, I can imagine. Right now, I know all our listeners are going to be chomping at the bit waiting for me to ask you all about the Bridges and Ross,
sure.
But I'm going to make them wait because I'm a terrible host. I want to talk to you about
it's building up the anticipation.
Oh, yeah. I don't want everyone to tune out immediately after they hear all about what's happening and all your thoughts. So I want to talk about the psychoactive substances bill.
Sure.
Yeah, so this is...
It's a serious issue, obviously. We're seeing, you know, so much damage happening through some pretty awful synthetic products hitting the market and people not knowing, what's going on with them and what they're taking and deaths and horrific damage going on. And it's something, you know, we addressed in government through the psychotic substances legislation, which was a world first and took a lot of interesting policy development to get there. And I've got to commend Peter Dunn for his work in that. And then, of course, what we've had is one of our MPs, reflecting on how serious an issue this is becoming and looking to lift the penalty in that legislation from 2 years from manufacturing and distributing these substances up to, we have proposed 8 years. New Zealand First came along and said, well, actually, we don't think 8 years is enough. We should make it 14 years. And that would make it the same as a Class B drug. Class A drugs are life imprisonment. Class B drugs are currently 14 years. So we said, look, yep, the main thing for us is that this is dealt with as a very, very serious issue because of the harm it's causing. We agreed with that, and as a result, the legislation was passed, although Labour and the Greens voted against it. Well, when I say passed, obviously it's gone off to the next stage, but showing certainly good progress.
Well, I find it interesting with this bill in particular because the reason why it's kind of been proposed that it's a rise in prison sentences is because that's seen as a deterrent. Do you think there's enough evidence to prove that currently?
Yeah, it's always an interesting question, but our criminal justice system is, and in fact, more than our criminal justice system, our whole social mores are built on the principle that we have a system of laws that weights certain offences differently compared to their severity. So deterrent is one of the issues. The other is keeping dangerous people out of society and making them pay a price for their offending. And there's a reason that murder is life sentence, and obviously lesser offences are much down lower at the fine community service level. So we've always had a system of weighting offences by their severity. You know, it'd be a pretty big change to say, well, we're throwing that all out and everything should have a sort of a blanket tariff. As I say, deterrence, one of those things, and you know, there's a range of views on that, but it's not the only reason that we weight offences and the sentences that go with them to reflect society's view of their abhorrence with that behaviour.
There's also something to be said about people going into our prison systems currently and not coming out rehabilitated. I think that's something that's been speculated on thoroughly over this past year. What do you think about that?
Oh, there's no doubt. We have to try and use every opportunity we have when people are in prison to help them address the drivers of their behaviours. There's no question of that. And when we were in prison, we took, and don't quote me on the exact numbers, but proportionally it was something like, I think it was 600 or 700 alcohol and drug treatment places in prison, and took it up to somewhere around 3,000 or 4,000. So we increased it by that sort of level of magnitude. We turned all of our prisons into working prisons, so that while in prison, prisoners were learning the routine of having a job, working 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, doing training, coming out with skills. Set up, for example, I've got quite a few prisons in my electorate, as it turns out. But one of the neat things we did at one of my local prisons is we set up a building yard within the wire at Rolleston Prison. We took houses out of the red zone from the earthquake, moved that to the prison, and then developed a whole training course and work program where prisoners were working on remediating these houses to turn them back into usable homes for New Zealanders, and then taking them out and putting them back into the community. Now, not only did that create, obviously, a great use for these damaged houses, but it meant our prisoners were getting a fabulous set of skills, and then we're working really actively with a lot of employers to be taking them on as they come out of prison. So there's a huge amount of work that goes into that. I mean, I've got to say, and I'm afraid you're getting into my previous roles as Minister of Social Investment, and this is something I'm really interested in. I've always said that our best chance to stop people, committing crimes and repeating offending the work we do in prison is important, but it's the work we do with them is in those early teenage years when they start showing behavioural issues and antisocial behaviours. That's our best opportunity to work with them. But by the time they're in prison, we certainly are doing everything we can to try and help them come out with skills, having dealt with alcohol and drug issues, having dealt with mental health issues where that's the issue. Often there's underlying childhood trauma and family violence issues. And as I say, the program of work that goes on in corrections is incredibly impressive. And I don't think most people actually have a full knowledge of the work that is going on in there. And we've seen a significant drop in the number of prisoners reoffending over the last 10 years as a result.
Mm. I actually have a friend of mine who works in corrections, so I get to hear a lot about the work he does, which is incredible. It really is,
yeah, it is.
Amazing.
They do some incredible stuff.
Mm. Absolutely. But just jumping back to what you said before about alcohol, trauma, mental illness that people within prison on a much higher rate are experiencing, is this a matter of we are putting people who have faced trauma and terrible life experiences, and I mean, if we treated addiction like a mental illness that it is, like, isn't it a matter of we are taking people with these life experiences and then just popping them into boxes sometimes?
It's a hard one, isn't it? Because nobody suggests that people have grown up with some of the childhoods and the experiences they've had the opportunities to get ahead that we would want them to have. There's no question that people have had some horrific upbringings in some cases, and the one, you know, the stat that always used to stagger me as well is the number of people in our prisons who are barely literate. I mean, these are people who have gone through 12 years of compulsory schooling and to come out of our education system unable to read and write to the level necessary to function in society. And that staggers and appalls me that for years and years and years we're turning out so many people out of our education system who are functionally illiterate. And if that's the case, where do you expect them to end up but in prison? So certainly we have to deal with those issues on the face of them, and we have to obviously work very hard to improve our mental health, improve our rates of family violence, improve our rates of drug and alcohol services available. But at the same time, I'm not apologetic about saying that the offending that these people do can be somehow forgiven or it may be able to be understood. But if someone goes out and does an armed robbery or breaks into a house and does a home invasion to get money to fuel their drug habit, or while they're high on P, beats the Jesus out of their wife and children, or, you know, there's still a matter of dealing with the act that they've carried out as a result of their addiction. So I agree with you. Drug and alcohol addiction is an addiction. It is a health issue. There's no doubt about that. And I put a lot of money into the alcohol and drug courts as an alternative way of trying to get people out of the cycle of offending and actually deal with the underlying issues. And I'm a huge proponent of those services because they're expensive, they're intensive, but actually really good evidence that they work. And we had a plan to roll those out across the country, and I hope the new government continues to do that. Mm-hmm. But, as I say, if someone commits a violent criminal offence, that is the piece we're treating as criminal. And while they're in prison, sure, we take the opportunity to work with them on those issues that haven't been dealt with to date. But equally, I want to keep our community as safe as we can, and if people are committing violent offences, that is the behaviour we have to respond to.
Mm. Now I'm going to jump into the hard questions for today. So Simon Bridges and Jamie Lee Ross. Yes, so I mean, just in the time that I've been interviewing you for, I've noticed you don't seem like the kind of person who just likes to drive the hammer down and say, you don't like to speculate. So in your eyes, what are the facts of the Simon Bridges and Jamie Lee controversy?
Well, I mean, gosh, there's a lot of them, and it's, unlike everyone else, I wake up every day and sort of see what's happening today, and it's certainly been a very fast-moving week. Look, what I know is that we have someone who used to be a member of our caucus who we now found out has been incredibly disloyal in that role, has been taping his leader, has been actively undermining his leader, has been making all sorts of allegations that he hasn't been able to establish, and that alone with bad enough behaviour, but what I've read in the last 2 days from Melanie Reed, what I've read this morning in the media about his treatment of behaviour with women, appalls me on a whole other level. I am not prepared to sit next to someone in caucus who uses women in that way, who bullies colleagues in that way, or who makes people feel deeply uncomfortable or inappropriate working with them. We had some indications of some of that bad behaviour when caucus was making its decision on Tuesday, and that was certainly very concerning to, I would say, all 55 of us. Over the last few days, what I've read has just increased that concern many times over. I think this is someone that has fooled a lot of people, including most of us, who had no idea that this sort of behaviour was going on. And I have to say, at this stage, I think he is it's an appalling suite of behaviour, if everything I've read is as it says it, and I have no reason to doubt it isn't. I am very pleased that he is no longer in our caucus. I want nothing more to do with him, and I hope that he is his behaviour is fully exposed and he's held to account, because if it is, as it reads in the reports, that is unacceptable, appalling, and something I want nothing to do with.
Mm. I do want to talk about Simon Bridges for a moment, though.
Sure.
There's a lot of comment from people at the minute that he should stand down just on the basis of his comments during the transcripts that were leaked. You stand behind him really firmly still, is that true? Yep.
Yeah, I absolutely do. Look, there's no doubt this has been an incredibly difficult matter for Simon and Paula actually to have to deal with, and I think they've done it very well, and any leader confronted with this sort of disloyalty and appalling behaviour, and a man who is clearly going to uses his defence sort of attacking everyone he can and hoping that takes the pressure off him. His Jamie Lee's strategy was clearly to try and undermine Simon as a way of taking the focus off him.
But
almost everything he said has been proven to be utterly false in respect of Simon. Now, look, Simon made a very inappropriate comment in respect of Maureen Pugh, and he regrets that deeply. Maureen is a wonderful colleague, a hardworking MP, and you know we support her fully. And Simon knows that was a comment that he shouldn't have made, and he regrets deeply. He's apologised for that. But you know we've all, I'm sure, in private conversations, with trusted, what we think are trusted people, sometimes vented about people we work with, and I'm not saying it's okay. But equally, it certainly wasn't intended to play out in the way it has.
But that has been a big focal point in the media in terms of Maureen. But there's also the matter of his comments about MPs that were deemed to be racist by some. And a Indian High Commissioner came out saying he was deeply offended. This is a really inappropriate way to be talking about people and classifying them as race in terms of what would be better and what would be worse, and that's really not a good look. Do you stand behind those comments?
Well, it's up to Simon to explain specific comments and the context behind them. I would note that a lot of the perhaps the worst comments in that tape were actually Jamie Lee's comments, and so you've got to be careful to distinguish between what Simon was saying and what Jamie Lee, who was clearly trying to entrap Simon in a conversation he rang up specifically to record, was trying to get at. But Simon has to explain the contents of the specific comments. What I'm saying is that we have a leader who I think is doing the best he can to deal with the situation. There's no doubt he made comments on that tape that he is now said he regrets and he wants to apologise for. But I certainly don't believe Simon is racist. I don't believe at all that the comments show that he is racist. And as I say, I think the worst comments in that respect actually came from Jamie Lee when you look at the attribution on the report. But if people are offended, then that's obviously something that's deeply regretful.
Mm. I'm also going to want to talk about the donation.
The
donation.
Oh, sorry, I just didn't hear you for a moment.
No worries at all. So the donation, obviously it's still speculated, it's still alleged, we don't know the full facts of it. Is this a common practice, and potentially does this mean that someone who donates might have pull in politics depending on their views?
Look, I certainly don't think so. That's certainly not what I've experienced. But let's be really clear here. Every political party survives on donations. We get no taxpayer funding, and I don't think we should. Every party has to raise significant amounts of money to run its campaign. We don't get, as I say, any funding from taxpayers, so we spend a lot of time fundraising and talking to people who support us, and people do give money to parties, and we are, in my view, incredibly careful to make sure that we comply in all respects with electoral finance laws to make sure that those disclosures are made. Everything that I have seen, and believe me, the party has gone through this very carefully, is that the donations received by the party are absolutely legitimate and have been properly dealt with and handled. And Jamie Lee's allegations have been proven. You know, while he gave that extraordinary press conference on Tuesday of, you know, an hour of his sort of ramblings, everything he has said, he has not backed up. And the media and the press gallery are sort of saying, well, look, there's just simply no evidence here to back up what Jamie Lee has claimed. He has made all sorts of allegations, but this man has been proven to be a liar, very disreputable, and a very, very untrustworthy character. So simply the fact that he wants to try and bring down people around him to take the pressure off him, I think shouldn't be allowed to get away. People shouldn't be allowed to destroy others' reputations in a clear attempt to lash out without making any sort of evidence at all. He's put out two releases. Neither of them show any impropriety whatsoever on the part of Simon or of our party secretary, Greg Hamilton. And frankly, I think people are wanting to keep the story running because it suits their political motives in some ways, but there is absolutely no evidence of any wrongdoing. And I think people need to remember that.
But, I mean, at this minute, the allegations about Jamie Lee, I am not personally going to fall on any side until I have some concrete...
No, I wasn't confusing you, Laura. I was just saying that, you know, we have to be careful that it doesn't become a beat up for political purposes. These are serious allegations. And like any person in our society, we all have to be very careful making allegations and, you know, running them even though they're salacious and a bit sort of interesting without evidence. That was, you know, that's the point I want to make.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's on both sides. We don't want to 100% draw the hammer down either way, just because. And I think I just got a text in from someone who said they are using sexual harassment as a tool to distance themselves from someone who called them out on their corruption. I think there is a lot of suspicion from the public right now that people are tossing allegations between two political figures right now, and it's starting to get muddled, and people are starting to potentially distrust the National Party right now.
Well, let's just go back to what you said, because the comment you read out from, because that's a pretty damaging thing to say, that we're using sexual harassment to draw attention away from corruption. First of all, there is no evidence whatsoever of any corruption, and Simon made it very clear. He invited this to be put in front of the police. He welcomed it. In fact, he demanded it because he wants there to be a very clear assessment of this so that everyone can see that there is absolutely no wrongdoing. And I think people who are leaping to the conclusion that there somehow is on the basis of the statements of a man who has to have serious questions asked about his integrity is a pretty spurious thing to do. There is no evidence whatsoever of any impropriety, and we welcome the police looking into it and making that point. And to say we're using sexual harassment, I find really offensive. Mm-hmm. Actually, if you look through this, the National Party did not put any of these allegations out. Simon was very careful in his statements to talk about nothing more than a pattern of behaviour. And even on Tuesday, when we expelled him from the caucus, we didn't mention that. It was Jamie Lee himself who said, who brought to the attention of the public that we had raised concerns. We, I'm talking about the party, it wasn't me, but the party had raised concerns with him about allegations that had been brought to it by four women. We didn't put that into media. Jamie Lee did. The stories we've seen in the last few days from Melanie Reed, and then again in the media today, are those own women coming forward and telling their story. So to suggest somehow that we have beaten up some incorrect sexual harassment scandal is utterly wrong and actually pretty offensive. These are serious issues that I think we've handled very, very carefully and not drawing attention to them. But if these women want to come out and speak and tell their stories, I think to dismiss what they have said by saying it's some sort of political smokescreen is pretty unfair to those women, actually.
Yeah. We have run out of time, and I'm sure we will be finding out more as the story unfolds. throughout the next week, so I'll be interested to see.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, it's certainly in my opinion, it's certainly, I've seen nothing like it, and it, you know, you can imagine that the 55 of us in National who, you know, work really hard on fighting for the things we believe in are incredibly disappointed by all of this, because it, you know, takes away from the issues that politicians should be spending their time on, and we are spending our time on. But of course, at the moment, this is sucking up all the oxygen. So, I tell you what, it's not what I'm in politics for. I want to get on with talking about the issues that actually we're there, and that the public pay us to be in politics to discuss and debate and to work on.
Mm. Well, we'll be interested in talking more about those issues next week. The ones that aren't so much about the controversy. Hopefully, we can move on to other things.
We don't know what's going to happen next week.
Well, exactly.
Normal transmission.
Well, that's the fingers crossed.
Yeah. You have a lovely long weekend.
You too. See you, Amy.
See you. Bye.
The National Party's Amy Adams on 95 BFM. The Wire.